are back. This is The Thing About Cars. I'm one of your hosts, Mickey Desai. Today, we've got a small crew around our table. We've got Dave. How are you, Dave?
I am small but mighty.
Wait. Dave, you're larger than life, man. What are you talking about?
I'm sorry. I'm the shortest member of this cast, except possibly Misty.
No, you're not.
And because Misty's in the Netherlands, I've never seen her except from the clavicle up.
Misty, how are you?
5'1".
You're 5'1"?
Yeah.
That's an emotional state. That's good. And last, but certainly not least, is our good buddy, Ben. Ben, how's it going?
Living large, man. Living large.
Excellent. We have a short agenda for us today. We've made some changes to our format a little bit, and we're just going to sort of extemporaneously go through today's agenda. Let's start with Dave. Today is Pride Day. So how do we signify that? Do we say Happy Pride Day to our audience?
Happy Pride, I think, is the most appropriate way to signify it. You know, Pride is commemorated always on the last weekend of June, most places, because that was when historically the Stonewall riots took place in New York in 1968. And today, actually, we're recording this on June 7th, 2021, which is the 50th anniversary of the first Pride Parade in Atlanta. Atlanta being one of the first cities to actually have a Pride Parade follow to commemorate the riots. But we were bouncing some ideas around about the show this morning. And I thought, in honor of Pride, maybe we would just do a quick shout out to Lambda Car Club International. Lambda Car Club is the largest collector club and car enthusiast club for LGBTQ and LGBTQ friendly automobile enthusiasts in North America. The purpose of LCI is to really bring the enjoyment and exchange of all information and specialty interests about classic cars, car enthusiasm into the community. And every year in Atlanta during the Pride Parade, which is now held in October because June Pride in Atlanta is like going to Pride on the surface of the sun. The Lambda Car Club always holds a car show in conjunction with it on the Saturday of Pride weekend. And then on Sunday during the parade, all of the Grand Marshals ride in the classic cars during the parade. It's a really cool group of people. In a lot of ways, it's like this show with cocktails coming out of the trunk.
Which to me sounds just like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
it is an amazing amount of fun. If you want to learn about them, they are on the web. You can find them by Googling Lambda Car Club or going to lccimembers.com. And one of the cool things, by the way, I should say up front, their website's a little wonky. It works better if you keep going back to the homepage to find things. One of the things that is really cool, though, is, you know, we're not alone in having LGBTQ car clubs in the United States. We were chatting online right before the show, and if you are like Misty, one of our listeners elsewhere in the world, you can find sister organizations of LGBTQ car clubs all around the world that welcome basically anyone who's really interested in classic cars and supporting the community.
Right. Yeah, I saw that link. It's pretty cool. I'm not at all surprised. I wonder what kind of a turnout they get in general, because until you brought it up, Dave, I wasn't aware that there was an LGBTQ car aficionado network at all in this country or even abroad.
Yeah, I think that they have, when I was reading about them, there's something like 100 chapters and affiliates around the world. 32 regional chapters in the United States with over 1,800 members.
Wow.
And then I counted about 30 to 40 chapters worldwide and a huge number of publications.
Yeah.
And when you go to the Lambda Car Club shows in Georgia, first of all, it's a super fun group of people. Second, there's no preconceived notion of what counts as a classic car. You know, if you consider it a classic, they welcome it. So, occasionally you might be a little inclined to the snarky is really, a 1981 Reliant K car a classic, but to the person who owns it, absolutely.
Sure. Absolutely. Yes. That's great. So, Claudette could be a classic car if Misty's willing to just represent.
I will. I'm going to take my little bi flag waving behind. We've already talked about my behind, which is also a classic at my age. And so that would mean that would be two car clubs I have to join. I have to join the Roadsters.
Yeah.
And the LGBTQ.
You got to get that dues money together.
I'll just never be home. So, we just, thank God for Wi-Fi. You just have to link me in,
Well, let's move on with our show. I have a car thing I want to talk about, but Ben, have you got something on your mind for today?
Yeah, well, back at the beginning of the month, I was at the Worship Cruise Inn, which is a great little event in Atlanta, and technically out in the suburb of Roswell, but don't let the name fool you. It's not a religious event at all. It's just so called because it's people who are devoted to their cars meeting on a Sunday morning. It's a really great little cruise in. It's kind of become the alternative to Caffeine and Octane. It's aimed at vintage, cars, a few modern exotics show up, but the point of it wasn't to talk about vintage or Worship. We can do that another time. But what happened out there was that, I was approached by a, very nice police officer from the Roswell Police Department, Sergeant, I want to say Newton, don't come arrest me if I got your name wrong. But she brought to my attention an event that's going on in Roswell that listeners in the Atlanta area and close to it might be interested in. It's called the Cops in Cars Car Show. This is on July 11th, which is a Sunday, from 11 to 3. And it's not really themed. Basically, any car you feel is worth showing is welcome, I believe. $25 fee to show, but it's free to the public to come and gawk. And the money all goes to help families in need.
Wait, when is this again, Ben?
July 11th.
July 11th. And is it an all-day thing? Or?
It's 11 to 3.
Okay.
And that's a Sunday.
In Roswell.
Yeah, it's at the Roswell City Hall.
Oh, yeah. I know where that is. I think I know where that is. Yeah.
Used to be one of the British car shows. I think the Atlanta British Car Fair used to exhibit on the City Hall grounds there. It's a nice little spot. It's a parking lot, but it's got some shade. It's a good venue. And so
cops and cars. So do we get to gently roast the cop as we're talking about their cars? Can we say how many tickets have you gotten this thing and they won't get personally offended?
I don't know. I mean, anybody can exhibit. It's not just cops who show their. Yeah. If I could bring mine, it may not be running at that moment, but anybody can sign up and exhibit a car at this.
Yeah.
I would like to actually suggest, Mickey, that you do that. I will follow you with the camera and you go provoke the cops and see exactly how far you can push them.
It wouldn't be the first time, but yes, let's get that on tape. That would be fun. That would be fun. So how many tickets have you got? Say what, Misty?
Can you live stream that so I can enjoy it?
Absolutely.
Thanks. And the only reason I say mine may not be running is that I might be in the middle of a transmission swap project at that time, but if not, then I'll bring it out.
Yeah, I was going to ask why it wouldn't be running. So you finally decided to pull the trigger and get the, what is it, the 4-speed out and put the 5-speed in?
Yeah, I'm thinking, the July, August time frame when it's real hot and I'm not going to want to drive this non-air-conditioned car anyway would be the perfect time to do it.
Right. That's cool. All right. Misty, you had something real quick I know we wanted to touch on. You were yelling exuberantly about something that happened in Formula One.
Oh, no, actually, today was the day for the Dutch. On Sky F1, before a lot of times before the main event, they'll show either F2, F3, or Porsche Super Cup. So today was a lovely day for the Lowlands, of which I am now a full citizen. Thanks. And we got to hear the Dutch national anthem twice because it was a Dutch driver that won Porsche Super Cup. Larry Tinforda.
Yep.
And our very own Max Verstappen. Love that boy. Not only took pole, led the entire race, and won. And even without the pit stop from Lewis Hamilton to try and get that fastest lap point, which he did, he still would have beaten Lewis Hamilton by over 15 seconds, which is more than Lewis beat him last year at the Austrian Grand Prix.
So this is the thing that strikes me about Formula One whenever I'm watching it. And I confess I'm not as much of a fan as Misty is. I don't go out of my way to catch the races, but if they're on, I'll watch them, right? If I'm channel surfing and they land on the screen, I'm going to watch them. But it always never fails to surprise me how much of a truly international event Formula One really is. And that always just sort of catches me by surprise whenever I watch it, and it always adds an extra edge of, I don't even know what adjective to use here, an extra edge of I don't want to say the word competition, but there's like World's Fair kind of feel to the event, right?
It's a global cultural event.
It is a global cultural event.
I mean,
with the soap opera attached.
Oh God, there's soap opera. Well, I mean, we've got Tsunoda, who's Japanese. We've got Italian drivers. We've got Leclerc. Is it Leclerc that's from Monaco?
I think that's right.
Yeah, French drivers named Esteban, makes perfect sense. Dutch drivers, it's literally a global sport. And, although I am very pleased to see, and I don't personally like Lewis Hamilton, but I will stand 100%, beside him with the We Race as One and a lot of the initiatives that he is spearheading to bring more diversity into Formula One, not just gender related, but also, minority related in, because I would absolutely lose my mind to see a female driver on the track.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
So I have only one question for you, Misty.
Sure.
Why don't you have a racetrack office chair or a race car office chair rather?
Because I'm still building the home office upstairs and I haven't been to the junkyard yet to actually go find that Mazda MX-5 Miata seat to make an office chair from. I can only do so much at a time, okay? I'm literally in the middle of moving my child from one bedroom to another so I can take his bedroom over for a home office. I have a desk that is in my hall in many pieces, only so many hours a day.
So, wait.
It's funny you mentioned that chair because when I was working at Delta as an engineer, my department head was given an office chair by one of our seat suppliers that was made out of a Delta coach class seat. And Delta, every quarter at the Delta Museum, has this great sale where they sell things like beverage carts and seats. And seats are a massive thing people want to buy. And they will put them in their home entertainment center and they will make desk chairs out of them. And as somebody who was on an airplane every other week for 23 years, all I could think of is why?
Yeah.
I have a permanently flattened ass based on Delta coach class seats. Why would I want to sit at that on my desk during a Zoom meeting?
It is weird. I don't get that either. I mean, certain other chairs, I get it, right? But
I guess maybe it's the joy of being able to recline this much.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Right. A 5-degree incline. That's too funny. Yeah. But I mean, I'm right there with you. It's like of all the chairs that you could pick, why would you choose that one? I don't understand it.
I mean, I got to say, though, that Miata seat, I've put some, I've done some long distance trips, like driving 3 hours round trip to pick up a frying pan. My husband goes, why? I said,
because you're not from Georgia, are you?
No, that boy ain't from Georgia, bless his heart. But that is a very comfortable seat.
Right.
So I just,
You know what I forgot to do?
What did you forget to do?
I forgot to do our grand trivia auto question for the day.
That's right.
So let me ask us a grand trivia auto question. I think you guys are going to like this one.
Clutch the pearls and gasp. We are so out of order. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to recover.
It's a new, you know, we're doing something a little different today. We're not exactly sticking to script, so I'm going to blame it on that.
Okay.
So our question is, very simply, in production since 1973, what is... That's not the answer, Dave.
See your Eurasian, Misty.
I've got a sloth, so bite me.
All right. One more time. Take two on Grand Trivia Auto. In production since 1973, what is Volkswagen part number 199-398-500A? Is it a folding bicycle? Is it an air freshener? Is it an early version of Fix-a-Flat? This is from 1973, right? Or is it a type of sausage? You need me to read those back to you again? Okay, the part number is 199-398-500A, in production since 1973, in reverse order. Is it a type of sausage? Is it an early version of Fix-a-Flat? Is it an air freshener? Or is it a folding bicycle? We'll answer that question at the end of the show. And my contribution to this episode is pretty, could be politically controversial, but I'm going to throw it on the table anyway, which is, I read this article in Vice. A gentleman by the name of Aaron Gordon wrote an article that was simply titled, "All Cars Should Have Been Hybrids by Now." And without getting into the nuts and bolts of the article, I think he's right. I've had the same thought before. You know, if we're looking at a car environment where everything's going to be electric in the next 20 years, 20 to 30 years, why haven't car manufacturers been leaning a little more hard on producing hybrid vehicles sort of as the choice to have, instead of going strictly internal combustion as they have for the last 10 years? That's the question, right? I mean, we could easily have cut carbon emissions. We could easily have extended the availability of fuels to help us move around. What do you guys think?
Well, two big things. One is they don't want to do anything that costs money, which that would have cost to, you know, shift production. Two, they've been available, and you've seen how many they've sold. So, you know, without a law, the market's not going to do it by itself.
I think that's right. I think, you know, especially for large companies move slowly. Mm-hmm. And a lot of market innovation in history has always been driven by a boutique outlier. In order to move a Ford or a General Motors or a Chrysler, you need somebody like a Tesla or any of the other e-cars to come in and really, you know, put the pressure on them that, hey, there is an innovation. We saw that in computers. We saw that in architecture. We saw that in any number of things that a lot of times the tastemakers are the outsiders that drive the insiders.
And to dovetail onto that too, that also helps when technologies aren't necessarily, you know, ready for the greater mass market. And a good example of that would be catalytic converters back in the 70s and 80s. What happened in the United States was the catalytic converter had been invented, and enough guys up in Washington thought it was a good idea to use, which it generally was, but they thought it was good enough to mandate them on cars. But the thing was, it wasn't really ready yet. The catalytic converters in those days decreased fuel efficiency. They decreased performance. You know, they cleaned up the exhaust, but they made the car work a lot less well. And so, it just wasn't something that people would have accepted otherwise. Now, fast forward a few years into the 1980s over in Europe, when I was over in Germany in the late 80s, I remember, you know, and they still did not require them at the time there, but they were coming out as an option. And the technology had been much improved by then. The catalytic converters of the late 80s were, you know, so much better as far as how the cars, you know, worked with them. And so I remember seeing a few Audis driving around in Germany that had a little sticker on the rear window that said, it translated into English, the new Audi 80 with catalytic converter. They made it a hip thing to pursue as an option. And enough people bought into it as an option that they eventually made it a standard feature. And of course, now you can't sell. Well, you know, since those days, Europe's led the way with emission controls. But, you know, kind of the same thing here with electrics. It's become kind of a hip thing for those who are willing to make the commitment. And as that happens, the technology is improving to the point where, you know, the mainstream market will eventually follow.
I think actually on that point also, what interests me now is now that the mainstream marketing is starting to move, who's moving faster than who is anyone else?
Right.
So, you know, the electric Ford F-150 truck, I think, is a game changer.
Yeah.
And being a super big advocate of Jeeps, I keep waiting for Chrysler to make a more aggressive move with the Wrangler. And, you know, here Ford is coming out saying, oh, we're going to, you know, make this game changer truck. And they're just now coming to market with a Wrangler hybrid.
Yep. Yep. No, and that leads to the next point, which is Ford, somewhat related here, is that Ford is the first major car maker to actually have a hybrid pickup truck, you know, from a U.S. manufacturer. And to Ford's credit, apparently it's starting to sell out. Ford's already got orders out the wazoo for the Bronco. And apparently now the Maverick is following suit, that people are turning towards Ford for a $20,000 to $22,000 hybrid pickup truck, which I think is a fantastic idea. Anyway, that was my topic for the day. But,
it's just cyclical because, I mean, the first electric car was invented in 1888. And, like, electric, you know, was really popular up until, like, the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when politics came into play and, you know, and lobbyists for the petroleum industry. And that's why we don't have the electric technology that we should. I mean, if we've had something since 1888, you would expect it to be a little more advanced than it is today.
Right.
Well, yes and no. There are a lot of technological hurdles to that, you know, were not easy to overcome. Batteries and chargers and motors and all that, you know, yeah, it existed back then, but it wasn't very good. And a lot of the reasons why some of it's good today is due to, material sciences that have come a very long way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but even as early as like 1896, they proposed like a battery exchange service, you know, where you can
fuel
station and, you know, switch the batteries.
So now the world is finally looking at, you know, fuel shortages, or at least less fuel for government and stuff like that is available. And so do you think that's what's driving the push to electric? And I think the answer is, yeah, I think that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, I think it's also a generational thing. I, you know, to play Misty for a second. I've been pushing on why Mazda hasn't come out with an EV Miata. That car strikes me as perfect for it. Now, I don't know if they would have to call it the Miata or the Iata.
I've read that a hybrid one is coming quite soon.
Okay, then I'll happily trade mine in.
Well, Mazda is one of those companies that plays things close to the chest. They don't reveal a whole lot about what they're working on.
Yeah.
But I also find it kind of funny that you guys are all like, you know, go Ford, you know, with this new. when Ford is actually pretty, bears a lot of the blame for the, I don't want to say demise, but for the falling out of favor of the electric vehicle.
I am not a pro Ford individual. I'm not an anti Ford individual. I am car company agnostic at this point. I don't understand brand loyalty amongst any brands these days, but that's just me. That's.
I will have to say, I am a fan of certain Ford products.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, as a business person, I usually wonder what the hell Ford's marketing department is thinking. it is the Mach-E a really interesting car? Absolutely. Is it a Mustang? Hell no.
Resounding no all around.
I
have friends who are buying one and they're calling it my Mustang. I'm like, if you call it a Mustang again, there's going to be violence. So are you saying, Ben?
Yeah.
Well, and more of an engineering thing, but I'd like to know why so many years into the production of the current Mustang, they haven't fixed those frickin' quarter windows, you know, on the side that don't go up all the way.
They've decided, that annoying fact, they've decided to call a feature.
Yes. Yeah, it's an air conditioning backup is what it is.
It's a let the rain in and make a lot of wind noise feature.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is. Yes. All right. Let's wrap the show with, shall we answer the Grand Trivia Auto question?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. The question was, in production since 1973, what is Volkswagen part number 199398500A? Is it an air freshener? Is it a type of sausage? Is an early attempt to fix a flat, or is it a folding bicycle? Dave, you want to take the first guess?
It is a sausage.
It's a sausage? Now, why would you say this?
I'm saying definitively. because I believe I have heard this before.
Ah.
Volkswagen has a sausage. So I'm, you know, plus the fact I had sausage for breakfast this morning. I'm doubling down on the positive pork product segment.
Yes, that's it.
If you are a pork producer out there and would like to sponsor the thing about cars, give me a call.
That's right. We'll even take it in kind because, you know, who doesn't love good sausage and bacon and whatnot?
That's right.
Misty, what do you think?
I'm going to go with folding bicycle.
Folding bicycle makes a ton of sense. Yep.
I have one of those.
Ben, what about you?
I've got to go with the sausage, not because I think I've heard it anywhere, but because now I've not been to an actual Volkswagen facility, but I have been to a German factory that had a cafeteria, and the food was quite good. And, you know, the Germans and their sausage, you know, I can totally see this happening.
Right. Well, you, Dave and Ben have it correct. The answer is quite obvious. It is the sausage, and Misty's like, no, it's not that obvious.
I wonder if you went into your local VW dealer's parts department and gave them that number and told them you need one, what would happen?
So here's the story. Volkswagen Currywurst is a brand of sausage manufactured by the Volkswagen car maker since 1973. It is manufactured at the company's Wolfsburg plant and sold in restaurants in its 6 German factories. The Currywurst are also sold externally at supermarkets and football stadiums and given away to Volkswagen customers. The sausage is branded as a Volkswagen original part and has been given the part number 199398500A. The product has been described as the most produced of any Volkswagen parts, some 6.81 million sausages being manufactured in 2018. In many years, the company has produced more sausages than cars. And just a side note of trivia, Volkswagen ketchup is also produced and sold as an accompaniment to the currywurst. So there.
because
a list of stores.
Yeah, because it's a currywurst. I think also it probably contributes to Volkswagen's emissions problems.
Yeah, amen, that brother. Could be.
Amen, brother.
Thank you, Dave.
Love a good currywurst, but not in a closed car.
Oh my.
On that note, thank you to our listeners for joining us for this slightly unorthodox episode of The Thing About Cars. We love you guys and hope you're all doing well out there. Please send us your ideas for The Thing About Cars, your suggestions, topics we need to cover. If you've got a worst car story, we want to hear that. We will otherwise hope you are staying safe out there, and we'll see you with another episode in about a week.
See ya.
Bye all. Nothing like ending a show with a good fart joke.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.